Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the 40th GNSOE PVP team meeting taking place on the 29th of January 2019 at 1400 UTC. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the telephone, could you please let yourself be known now?
Hi, it's Christina. I'm only on the phone while I'm waiting for today's various updates to download. Thanks.
Thank you, Christina. Hearing no one further, we have listed apologies from Emily Taylor, the RRSG, Ashley Heinemann, GAC, Cavus Aristotle, GAC, Diane Plout, IPC, Leanne Sanchez, ICANN Board, and Mark Senkarkic, MBC. And actually, Mark will be on for part of the call, and then his alternate, Steve DelBianco, will be on for the other part of the call. They have formally assigned Sarah Wild, Chris Lewis-Evans, Raul Goslin, and Brian King as their alternate for this call and any remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members' return date. As a reminder, the alternate assignment form must be formalized by the way of the Google assignment. The link is available in the agenda pod to the right, as well as the meeting invite email. Statements of interest must be kept up to date. If anyone has any updates to share, please raise your hand or speak up now. Seeing or hearing no one, all documentation and information can be found on the ePVP Wiki space. There is an audio cast and view only for Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call. So please remember to state your name before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public wiki space shortly after the end of the call. Thank you. And with this, I'll turn it back over to our chair, Kurt Pritz. Please begin.
Thanks very much, Terry, and welcome everybody. And thanks. Thanks for the work that's occurred over the last week on the various items that have been put out for email consultation. there's a lot of work flying around, as you know, and I find it confusing too, and use different tools and talk to staff about developing different tools to organize that and make it easier to follow. As late as yesterday, we were talking about possibly using different apps for this, but we don't want to make too many, as maybe email is not the best organizational application, but we don't want to make too many changes this late in the game. I'm very sensitive to the comments about the amount of work and the number of sessions as we near the end of this phase here. In a way, maybe I should be like the least sensitive, right, because of the time and putting in, but I certainly understand about other obligations, and I certainly understand about surprises, and that you've got your life planned around certain meetings and a certain set of meetings. And so, to a certain extent, in the very immediate future, we have our head down and work through these remaining kind of difficult issues left for the end. And like I said, keep our head down and kind of disregard all the cacophony around us with all the different information flying around, but we'll develop a methodology for bringing this all back into focus and single coherent product as we climb out of this phase of the effort. So I think that through the, starting way back in Los Angeles, but certainly culminating in Toronto, we came to conclusions that form the basis of what's going to be a substantial and meaningful report. And in addition to going gaining issues, I think it's important for us, especially on the support and leadership team, to decide what's necessary for that report to make meaningful going into phase two and being sufficiently substantial to meet our goals. And so we'll be taking a look at that too. So in the meantime, you know, our job, as I said, is to keep our head down. I think, you know, we want to try to close these issues off on email list. I'm beginning to think we might not be able to do that because there's edits, you know, from the spectrum of wordsmithing all the way to substantial edits come in. I realize that in many cases it is likely to be necessary before we close these things off. But I think you've done a good job of making thoughtful comments and making the comments from your group and from individuals. So I think that's really good. I'd urge you again to focus on what's really important in the recommendation. So, you know, if I understand that wording changes might improve the recommendation in many people's eyes, at the end of the day, 5 years from now, will it have an effect on how we're doing things? So we really want to focus those changes we think have to be made in order to improve that. So with that, you know, just, you know, pay attention, and Marika can elaborate on that later, but pay attention to the wiki page as the support team is continually updating that with comments that are made on the email list. And our methodology is going to be after, as each one of these internal comment periods by us on email close down, we're going to pluck each one, look at the comments and writing across the board and make a recommendation based on that and in some way try to get closure on that, whether we can get closure on email or have to have a meeting. So I'm very sensitive to the workload and the confusing environment right now that we think will settle out once these email comments are settled. We're going to take those email comments, try to, you know, get to final recommendations upon which we can all agree, and then take some steps, some organizational steps, so that the smoke clears for you guys, and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, which hopefully is not too far away. So I think that's all I have. I'd ask you know, Marika or Caitlin or Barry to augment what I've said if I missed any of the action items instead of that little soliloquy, and ask if anybody on the team has any comments. Hi, James. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Kurt. James speaking. First off, you know, apologies if my note to the email list was a little short, or I was going to say curt, but let's say a little rude yesterday because of the surprise of all these extra sessions that were hitting my... So, you know, I pretty much I'm on board with what you're saying. I want to point out, though, that it's not just a function of workload. I think it's also important for us to note which of these questions and recommendations could actually benefit and improve with some more time, and which of these, you know, if we had six more months, would still probably be unchanged or unmoved from where we sit today, and not to spend a whole lot of more time on the latter. And that's just something I wanted to put on the table. Not, you know, and I'm thinking in Toronto, we had a couple of proposals that it seemed like we had a framework for agreement, like right out of the gate. And then the more people talked about it, the more they thought about it, the further apart we drifted. And so sometimes I think, you know, more time is actually not what we need. It's not the input that we're looking for. So just throwing that thought out there. Thanks.
Thanks. Alan Greenberg, please go ahead.
Thank you. Can we have clarity on what our schedule is next week?
Yeah, so the team put out a schedule. What we'll do is, so a very succinct and easy question to ask Alan, knowing it's difficult to answer because it's somewhat predicated on the results of our meeting today and Thursday. But, you know, our meetings will continue on Tuesday and Thursday
Let's just make it simple. Before the end of the meeting, can
and
we decide if we're meeting on Monday or not?
In, but we will. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Thanks. Mark Anderson?
Thanks, for Mark Anderson. I'll ask another short answer that's easy to ask and hard to answer. What is our intended date to publish a phase one final report?
So I think I hate to use the word drop dead. So I think our drop dead date is February 11th. And the reason for that is that we need to get the report in the hands of the GNSO Council. In time for their emergency meeting to talk about this, to allow them to at least look at the final report, and we can give them a briefing so they know how to read it and understand it. And then at the subsequent GNSO meeting, a week or two later, it would be voted upon. So I think that's that. But, that's a short answer to a short question. And there's some other scenarios, too, that we're going to discuss at the end of the meeting. So Amr, there's a meeting on the 14th, and then I think a meeting 2 weeks after that. So the purpose of the meeting on the 14th would be to brief, to say, here it is, here's the report, GNSO, and do a presentation sort of so they know how to read the report easily. And so that would be the kickoff discussion for them so that they could vote on it in their next meeting, and that would still be within the time frame. Marika's put some, okay. Marika got the exact right GNSO bylaw compliant dates there. Alan?
Thank you. This probably should be something I know by heart, but I don't. Assuming we make the deadlines you're just talking about, when do we expect the board to approve this? In other words, did the schedule that was laid out originally allow for any implementation time, or was their decision going to be on May 20-something? The reason I'm asking is with the proposal that James made.
Timeline. Go ahead.
Yeah, with the proposal that James made, we no longer need to have something that can be implemented the day the temp spec expires because we have a replacement for the temp spec, assuming we go along with that. Does that relieve the pressure at all?
Yeah, so we've talked about that, and it might. So the current timeline, the way I've just laid it out and where Marika's elaborated, will allow board approval by May 25th in accordance with their schedule of meetings. The proposal made by James and discussed by others would then provide time for an implementation effort to implementation activities between them. Whether or not that provisional policy or transitional policy can also take up some time if we don't finish our work in time for the board to consider it on May 25th, that's another question. I want to kind of channel the James point of view in that we're very close on a lot of issues, and the discussion might necessarily take up the time allotted to it. So for the time being, I want to aspire to the schedules we have without anticipating missing them, and try to close off as many of the conversations as we can. Anybody else? Did you have a comment, Ellen? All right, Marika, Caitlin, Barry, any other opening comments? Okay, I assume everybody's got their PCRT open, and Mark Anderson.
Sorry, Kurt, Mark Anderson. One more thing I want to raise is just walking backwards from the 11th, and thanks for letting us know the 11th is our new drop dead date, and why we're planning on that. I think that makes sense. We knew that 10 days before the February 21st council meeting is their document filing deadline. So that's a good a date as any for us to aim for. But I wanted to just throw out there, we're going to need to work backwards from there a little bit. All the representatives on this EPDP are representing our stakeholder groups. Eventually we're going to need to indicate the level of consensus for each of the recommendations in that final report. And we're going to need time to go back to our stakeholder groups to, make sure we have, clear direction on what that level of consensus is, what consensus we should be indicating, do we support or not. And so I want to make sure we're working backwards from the 11th. And that we have, we have a final report far enough in advance. Ideally, we'd have at least a week before we determine consensus that we can circulate it with our stakeholder groups. Get support for providing our consensus. And I think this is important because we don't want to rush through this and get into a situation where it gets to the GNSO Council and the GNSO Council is receiving instructions not to support it. We want to make sure we have time to circulate and get support from our stakeholder groups prior to that consensus call. So I just want to make sure in our planning we're out of runway as far as time goes. But I think certainly from a registry perspective, we need to have time to take this back to our stakeholder groups, and I suspect other constituencies feel similar. Thank you.
Yeah, so that makes perfect sense. I've been thinking through this myself. And of course, when you're talking about consensus, you're talking about the consensus within your group to support specific recommendations or purposes for processing data. And I'm wondering, I'm wondering if we have a status where in, 22 or whatever recommendations and 7 purposes, we've got, 20 or so of them buttoned up. Is it possible to, is it possible, and I'm not asking for an answer now, but is it possible to kind of, bifurcate that approval process and start a conveyor belt within your own groups and saying, here's the recommendations that have been put on the shelf, that have been the discussion's been settled by teams. So if all you guys on the call can think about ways of doing that. I understand there needs to be a sort of a gestalt look at the whole thing and approve it, but the necessary steps I think are to look at each one. So to the extent you can lay some additional runway backwards or forwards by taking that approach. Let's think about that. But I'm saying that as a suggestion and not saying that to say adequate time should be granted for that whole look. So, Alan Greenberg?
Yeah, I'll point out that Mark's suggestion makes complete sense, but typically we allow 2 weeks to do that, and we only have 2 weeks before the 11th. Slightly under 2 weeks. So either we're pipe dreaming completely or something's going to have to give.
Shoot up. Yeah, shrewd observation, Alan. Yes, I know. Margie.
Hi, it's Margie. I agree completely with what Alan and Mark have said. I think the other thing we really need to understand is the methodology by which we will look at the consensus. Is it recommendation by recommendation? Is it the full report? I think those are the concepts that I think we really need to understand as we go back to our teams, organizations, and groups to get the consensus level. So I agree completely with what the others have said. Thank you.
Thanks, Margie. So let's we're going to discuss this. And so we could get into that too. So I think we can discuss this in as part of Agenda 4, wanting to get to it, and I want to get it get into the substance here. So if it's all right with you guys, let's just do that. So the first topic has to do with recommendation 5 and the data elements that are transferred from the registrar to the registry. So we want to go to the PCRT in the summary comments and give you a few minutes to read those. I think that, you know, my characterization of this is might not be right. My takeaway from the initial report is we got to these data elements the first time because we did all the data elements workbooks. We summed up all the different processes, the dispute resolution processes and so on, and, you know, did the data maps and followed how the data flowed around. And then when we summed them all up, we had the data elements that the registries needed, that the registrar should transfer to the registry. So we never really got to the discussion of thick who is, rather we found that with the thick registries anyway, that certain DRPs require transfer of data from registrars to registries. So that sort of addressed the question without getting into the thick who is, thin who is debate. And so we avoided talking about that, and I wonder if we need to have that discussion or we can just rely on the data elements matrix and their results. But anyway, that's sort of my opinion. And then please take the PRC handy, which I'm sure you do. There's those two documents there, the PCRT itself, the public comment research tool, and the summary doc that Caitlin did for this one. So we'll start the timer for 5 minutes and get a cup of coffee. No, and we'll read these documents. Okay, we're just about good to go. Okay, well, Thomas is volunteering to start off the discussion, so that's terrific. Please go ahead, Thomas.
Thanks, Gareth, and hi, everyone. I hope the sound quality is okay, or at least okay-ish. What concerns me a little bit with the comments that we received is that they are asking for certain things to take place or not, but I think that particularly the question of what data can be transferred is purely a matter of legal assessment. And I think we've gone through that on multiple occasions during our work, that those data elements that you have to transfer from the registrar to the registry to perform the contract can be transferred. For the other data elements, you can assert a legitimate interest and transfer on that basis. But where a registry is not asserting a certain interest and thereby allow for the transfer based on 6.1F, I think we're sort of stuck. And I think that this is the basic systematic approach that we have to take when closing this part of our deliberation. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. Go ahead, Mark. I'll comments, but let's hear what Mark has to say.
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson. In reading through the comments on recommendation five, many of them are on opposite ends of the spectrum, and there's a lot of references to thin and thick concepts. And I think for our purposes, I think we need to recognize that the concepts of thin and thick don't suit our purposes in this EPDP, particularly in terms of GDPR, which is, of course, what we're trying to solve for here. And in the next-gen RDS PDP, which ultimately was terminated, we came to a similar conclusion that, thin and thick were specific specific terms with specific meanings. And what we developed in that working group, I think one of the things that we did well was we identified what we called the minimum public data set. And that was sort of the baseline set of elements that were required. And of course, registrars would be free to add additional elements on top of that. I think it's our purpose seven. Hopefully, I'm getting the right number there. Talks about additional eligibility requirements, for example. But I think the point there I'm trying to make is a lot of the comments focused on thin or thick. So I'm advocating for one or the other. But I think that just doesn't fit what we're trying to solve for here. And what we're trying what we'll come up with at the end, what will come out, won't be thin or won't be thick. It'll be something else new altogether. We're replacing it with a new set of data elements that are required to be processed. And, others have mentioned this and so I'll just say, under GDPR, we have to have a purpose for each of these processing activities, each of the data that we're processing, and we have to be able to justify it under the terms of GDPR, which includes things like data minimization. And so if we define what is the minimum set of data, which, I think we've taken a stab at in the initial report, and be able to tie that back to purposes or reasons why we need to do that, then I think we'll have addressed not just our tasks that we've been set up to do by the GNSO Council and our charter, but also the comments that many people have posted.
Bart, if you're speaking, I think you're muted.
Man, I was doing really well too for a change. So I think thank you very much, Mark. And unless you or Thomas disagree, I think your comments are in alignment. And so to reflect that, I have the same understanding, and to restate it for everyone else, that we're saying that the approach we took at the outset was essentially the approach in that we developed the purposes for processing registration data, and then did the data analysis, the data element requirements, and transfers and disclosures for each of those. Admittedly, we're going through a correction of those now to make sure they're correct. But the way of going about that was correct. And at the end, when we finished that, we saw from the various purposes that a number of data elements had to be transferred to registries in order to accomplish that. And so those data elements, sort of regardless of the thin debate, the data elements that are required by the purposes we've developed are identified in this recommendation 5. So essentially would remain unchanged pending the outcome of the data analysis that's going on now. And then I have two really brief corollaries to that. And that is to make sure that we capture the registration data for those registries that have registration restrictions, so make sure that's part of that. And also there's individual cases based on business models that registries might make to registrars that necessity for there's a necessity for a 61F reason that for transferring that data over. That would be essentially dependent on the business model of the registry. But I think that's that in a semi-coherent way. Margie?
I'm sure this is Margie. Regarding the thick or thin conversation, I didn't think it was our prerogative to actually eliminate it. A consensus policy, which is what we would do if we took away that that provision. And I think if that's the path we're going to go, I feel that the only justification would be, is it against GDPR to have a fixed registry? And that's certainly something that in the legal team we could go ask Ruth. But absent that, I think it's probably outside, the parameters of this group to, entirely delete, which is what we would be doing, a consensus policy that we developed for many years. And we can certainly go back to the rationale for the policy in the first place. I imagine that's probably in the final report from that consensus policy, PDP. From our perspective, it's better to have the data at the registry level. It makes a lot of sense to have it at the registry level for a number of reasons. I think that's something we should discuss as to whether we're at a position now where we're no longer going to support that consensus policy.
James, please go ahead. Thanks, Margie. I'm not ignoring your comment at all. I'm just letting others respond instead of me, so thank you for that. James?
Hi, Kurt. James speaking. Sorry, a little slow on the unmute button. So just wanted to raise the point that both registrars collectively and a number of them individually have pointed out that from our perspective, we're not opposed to transmitting this information to the registry. However, I think that we have maintained that whether we do or not is kind of predicated on there being a legal justification for that data sharing, and that case needs to be made outside of some of the functions that are covered by other purposes. So, for example, data escrow covers things like business failure, business or technical failure of a registrar, and so forth. So, I think that again, we're kind of taking this. You could say we're sitting on a fence, but I think we're more agnostic of, whether we collect and share this data with registries or not is very much dependent upon them, the registries making the case that we must. And so I think, to Mark's point, I do think we need to kind of change our vernacular from, when we talk about thin or thick. Margie's correct. We have this consensus policy that all registries must be thick, but we're kind of taking a machete to all of our contracts and consensus policies right now. So I feel like, everything is on the table and up for question. And whether we revisit the intentions of that policy, whether we take a look at the, previously thick registries and talk about paring down their data set, which I think is part of our recommendations, I think all of that's on the table. And I think flipping it around, and I hate to put words in Mark's mouth here, but I think flipping it around, I think it's really somewhat problematic if we start talking about registries and registrars being compelled to share data with a registry that doesn't want the data. Perhaps I think that opens up an interesting venue as well, particularly if they can't make the case of why they should need it. So I just keep going back to the registrar position, which is we'll share the data. We're not opposed to it, but you have to tell us why. And help us make that case. And in some cases, I don't see the registries wanting to make that case. Thanks.
Kurt, you may be muted.
Thanks. I was in deep thought. Alan Greenberg, please go ahead. Thanks for your comment, James.
Thank you. Without talking about the subject itself, this seems to be a perfect subject to ensure that we don't come to closure by any date, never mind February 11th. Just a thought.
Thanks, Alan. Alan Woods.
Thanks. Just in relation to and follow up what James is saying there, I'm not going to add very much to it. I mean, I think, the position of the registrars is pretty reasonable on that. And I think we've, from a registry point of view, there is a lot of new GTLD registries out there who can, under 6.1F, specifically request that. And, there are two specific things that jump to mind straight away, and that is, escrow and for the enforcing acceptable use policies in terms of conditions, which are really a new creature when it comes to the new GTLDs and the expectations of the ICANN contracts on that. So, I mean, I think we can definitely come to an agreement on that, and I completely agree with Mark. This is no longer a thin or thick. This is, we are here to define a minimum data set, and the minimum data set is the best of both worlds, effectively. We are justifying from a data protection point of view the data which will be collected for the purposes, and that they are justified with a legal basis. So that is the minimum data set. This is not a question of thick or thin anymore. So I think we can move along, absolutely.
Thanks. So one of them, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that essentially, our previous work in Foundation 5 says much of the data that's collected by registrars has to go to registries for at least a couple of these purposes. I think URS might have been one of them. But that approach does result in registries receiving a significant amount of the data. So from a practical extent, registries can and probably will receive a lot of data. Going to the other side of it, I'm not so sure that we want our headline to be, EPDP group blows up FIC who is policy without some consultation with the group that's implementing that. So the group that's implementing that is, taking into account the various factors that built up that policy, including the rationale for doing that. And I wonder if that there's some way out of it that says that we're going to go down the same path we did for the initial report in all the purposes, the data elements where they got to get to, and these are the data elements that are going to be transferred to the registry plus whichever other ones they need, either by necessity for their contract or because of a legitimate, interest that happens to be a business interest or something like that. But then, throw over to the IRT on thick versus thin. That in our work, we've identified that transfer of data or disclosure of data or processing of data—that's a better term—requires one of these legal bases. So, in your contemplation of this implementation, please take this into account and ensure that if you're making these transfers or disclosures, that you have a legal basis for it and leave that with them. As Alan Greenberg said, I think that would be a fairly long discussion and too long that we have. So my pitch would be for that we leave this essentially this and make that notification under one of our other recommendations, a very specific recommendation to the FIC who is IRT to take account and our findings. Hadia and then Mark.
Okay, thank you, Kurt. So you actually said was what I was partially going to say, that we don't need actually, as Marika put rightfully in the chat, we have another recommendation, which is recommendation number 22, which speaks about thick and thin. And so I would think that we don't need here to think much about thick and thin registries. We just need to look at the recommendation as it is, recommendation 5, and it refers also to recommendation number 4, and leave this talk about thin and thick to the recommendation where there is a referral to it, which is recommendation 22. Thank you.
Thanks very much. For that, Hadia. Mark, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Mark. I'm very mindful of what Alan Greenberg said. This is a topic that we could probably spend months on this topic alone, and when we don't have months. So I'm very mindful of the point Alan made that. We need to find a way to move past this if we're going to, get to a February 11th deadline. I do want to, just sort of, state the obvious. The recommendations that we're making, the recommendations that we made in the initial report, and what we've drafted in the in this first draft of the final report, don't coexist with a recommendation of thin or thick. What Thomas put in chat, it's blown up already. That's sort of a reality. We've defined the data elements that are required for each of the processing activities, and the result of that is not thin and it's not thick. It's something new altogether. We can't sort of think in terms of thin or thick anymore. We've defined a new set of requirements that really don't coexist in this stated concept of thin versus thick. So we really need to find a way to move past that. I'll take a quick second to speak, as somebody who's on the thick implementation team. I'll say, that, we have put our work on hold. We have, that team hasn't met in a very long time, really as a result of GDPR and sort of like many other groups pending the results of this. There is a thick implementation team out there that's really on hold pending this.
So, Margie, I think what I'm hearing from the group is that we've gone about this in a methodical way, and I think it'd be for us to, toss this, send this remaining issue back to that IRT, as everybody's saying, given the time constraint, but given them the opportunity.
I think Kurt may have called on me. I'm only hearing one word out of 10 from Kurt. Can someone confirm?
Hi, Ellen. This is Terry. I can.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You can't hear me. I don't know what it is, but please.
All right. Someone needs to fix Kurt's line, but I'll make my comment. I am somewhat lost at this point. We're having nice generalized discussions. I don't know what anyone is proposing or even what the comments are proposing that we're looking at that we change in this particular recommendation. Are there specific elements that people believe we either should be adding or subtracting from this list? Because I am somewhat confused as to what we're actually talking about. We had a concrete list in the interim report, and I'm not quite sure where we are right now, although we're having a really interesting wide-ranging discussion. Thank you.
Hi, this is Kurt. Can everybody hear me?
No, I can.
Okay, terrific. So I was, I think we have a concrete proposal. I think the proposal is to leave the data elements analysis we've done and the recommendation that we have for number 5 intact. Those data elements might change pending the work of the team that's working on the data elements, but that shouldn't change the recommendation. I think that we've decided through Hadia's comment and the use of Recommendation 22 to reissue to the IRT for Thick Who Is, explaining the reason why we were this back to them. And that would be using Thomas's argument that they must find the appropriate legal basis for such a data transfer. So I think that's where we are. There any comments on agreement with that? Okay, terrific. So I'm going to declare agreement on this one and go on to the next part of our agenda. Great. So the next part of our agenda has to do with Recommendation 12. Which is reasonable access. This is where Alex Deakin did some work. I think Alan helped him out somewhat, and a couple others helped him out. And so I think we'll ask staff to, there's an original version of this, and then there's a new version of this that Alan and a couple others, that Mark, I'm going to start again, that Alex and a couple others put together. And yeah, I guess put that up in a clean version or a red line version, it does matter. And, you know, if everybody doesn't have it ready, just give us a couple minutes to read through that. The link to that document's also in the agenda. So go ahead.
Kurt, I've got my hand up. Can I speak?
Mark, I see you have your hand up.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Mark Anderson. I guess it's could you restate where you know what the conclusion to the discussion on recommendation five is? I think you know it wasn't super clear to myself and others exactly where we wound up on that.
Why don't, while we're reading this, why don't I collaborate with staff and let's type it up so that it's clearer than my words, and then we can read it, and I think that'll be better for all of us than for me to attempt that. Hey, everyone. We're just fiddling some wording here. Marika, are you ready to put some wording up on the previous discussion, or with our the discussion on recommendation 12? I'd like to close off the earlier one if we can.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. This is Marika. I can post the language in the chat that kind of staff has taken away. You know, as a reminder, you know, this is the language that, you know, in response to the comments and concerns that have been flagged, and obviously this could also be a note that's included in the final report in relation to this topic.
So I don't see it yet. Are you planning to put it in the big window or where? Or is it just in the chat? No, I see.
Yeah, just put it in the chat.
Well, it's kind of. Where's the first part?
I'd just like to comment on the Rec 5 summary, if I may.
Yes.
Thank you, and thanks, Alex, for allowing me to speak first. There has been a vivid exchange on this in the chat, but let me speak this into the record. I'm not sure whether we actually reached consensus that we would pass on this work to the SIC with IRT. I think it's where I have doubts that are obviously shared by Christina Rosette that this is appropriately placed with this IRT. And also I think that group has both the mandate as well as the information at its fingertips to create policy on this. So what I heard during our discussion is that the language of recommendation 12 is shall remain unaltered, and that for the reference that is made in the text of the recommendation, i.e. the reference to the data elements, that we would discuss this when we discuss the data elements. But I have not really heard that we wanted to just get rid of that piece of work as much as we would probably love to, and put it in the hands of the IRT for the FICUIS PDP. Thank you.
So does the note, the way Marika has put it up in the chat, that's my one, by now ameliorate that concern, Thomas? It's certainly different than the way I put it in my verbal description.
Sorry for being difficult. I just got a sense that our discussion ended somewhere else than what you summarized. I'm okay with other language to summarize where we are, but I think that I would really appreciate some help or be advised that I'm on the wrong path. I think we need to have full transparency about where we are and what the next steps are on recommendation 5, and I'm not clear on that. Sorry, it may just be me.
Let's let Mark go and then continue that discussion and see if we can finish it.
Thanks, Kurt. It's Mark. You're not alone, Thomas. I agree with your sentiment there. A couple of people have noted this in chat already. The IRT can't create or change policy. It's just, it's just about advising the implementation of policy. And there are three policy recommendations coming out of the thick who is PDP, one of which was all registries, current and future should be thick. That recommendation, thick is a very, I guess I'll say, with the possible exception of the billing contact, thick is a pretty well-defined, has pretty well-defined meaning. And as part of this PDP, we're changing that. We're changing what is required for the, what data is required to be processed and transferred. I'm concerned that, if we just throw this over the fence to the IRT, an IRT that's not empowered to create or change policy, then the best they can do is refer it back to the GNSO Council, which I don't think is the right long-term solution here. I think we're empowered to deal with this, and that we should address it as part of this PDP. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark. Margie wanted to provide a clarification. So, Margie, if it's okay with you, I'll let Marika speak first.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Marika. I just want to clarify that, recommendation 22 is
Marika?
Not specifically. Yeah, can you hear me? Recommendation 22 is not specifically about, referring something to an IRT. It's just making the case that, based on the outcome of the work of this group, further analysis will need to be undertaken in relation to the impact on existing consensus policies. And as, ThickWiz is an existing consensus policy, an analysis will need to be made, what is the impact on that existing consensus policy? And, once that analysis has taken place, that could be tied into a recommendation of how to address, concerns that may be flagged or, what may no longer be possible as was originally recommended. The very avenues for that, if it's specifically related to implementation issues, the IRT may be the appropriate vehicle. However, if it flags new policy questions, it is something for the GNSO Council to then address. So, again, I just want to clarify that recommendation 22 is not about referring this to the IRT to further look into. It's really about, making sure that whatever consensus policies are already in place, that these are updated accordingly to align with, whatever this group is recommending. And in certain cases, that means that, certain parts are overwritten, or in certain cases, it may also mean that existing consensus policies are not no longer implementable as they were originally written. But of course, that does not prevent the GNSO Council to undertake additional work on those topics to further explore them and see, if how policy recommendations would need to be modified if, the desire is there to still, require similar, put similar requirements in place. So I hope that helps, that clarifies the situation a bit.
Thanks, Marika. Go ahead, Margie.
Sure, this is Margie. And I support that what Marika just said. I think that that makes a lot of sense. I think the public comments did support the continuation of FIC, and so I think it would be problematic at this juncture to shift course and take a recommendation that's different than what we have already have in the initial report.
Did we lose? Is it just me? Thomas, go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. To be quite honest, I think we can't shy away from concluding our deliberations on recommendation 5. It's one of the questions that we're charged with responding to. I think we have the facts. We have done some legal groundwork. We have something in our initial report, and we need to come to a conclusion. And whilst, you know, there might be merit in sending this over to the IRT to see whether, you know, conflicts with the CQS policy need to be addressed, which they surely need to, we have to come up with a clear proposal as to where the data that's being collected by the registrar can travel, for what purpose, and on what legal basis. So I don't see any way for us to not take on that work. And additionally, we have done work on this. We've discussed this at length. What we're doing now, what we're supposed to do, is to see whether the public comment received warrants changes in the language of recommendation 5. And I'm still unclear as to where we are with that. So sorry, I'm not, you know, if I'm too difficult or talking nonsense, please let me know. But I'm really
thanks, everyone. So I missed a great deal of Margie's comments. So I'm going to ask Marika again to, like, sum up where we are and taking Margie's comment into account and seeing if we have, you know, a final form. Because I think, you know, we're right on top of where we need to be.
Thanks, Kurt, for that task. I'm slightly confused because I think we're all saying the same thing, and maybe it's not reflected, you know, accurately in the wording. But I think what we're all saying, this group is has made the analysis on, you know, which data should get transferred from registrars to registries. You know, has provided, you know, the legal analysis, the lawful basis, and, you know, the purposes for which this should happen. So that basically becomes now, you know, the recommendations when it comes to transfer from data from registrars to registries. And similarly, I think several people have noted that, you know, we should move away from the language of using thin versus thick. Maybe we'll talk about, you know, minimum data set or basic set. And again, I think that's something that the data element workbook small team will take on. And I think we all also agree that, you know, the impact of these recommendations needs to be translated or override any existing policies that may no longer apply in the light of, you know, these recommendations, not taking away the ability from the GNSO Council to undertake, you know, additional policy work on some of these issues should they consider that desirable. I think, you know, I think we're all saying the same thing. And again, maybe we can refine the wording a bit to make sure that is all in there. But I think that is what I've heard everyone saying and agreeing with, I hope.
So we're left at the end. We're left with the recommendation the way it was written originally. We're redoing some of that data element analysis, and we're using recommendation 22 to refer our findings to these other policies to see if it has an impact on those. Those three things. Okay, really good. Sometime over cocktails, I will share with you what goes through my head while we have these discussions, and then apologize for overcomplicating them. On recommendation 12, I think Alex was going to take us through the amendments he and others made to recommendation 12 and their proposal. So, Alex, if you want to get at the start of the queue, that'd be great.
Sure, Kurt. Thanks, everyone. This is Alex. So let me tee this up. First, remember that Rec 12 isn't about access, right? This is about the temp spec concept of reasonable access, which I believe should be called reasonable disclosures. Specifically, we're answering the charter question regarding definition of the term reasonable and further detailing the existing bullets in the initial report. So at the end of the Toronto meeting, a small team discussed several topics related to recommendation 12. The first was the concept that the process for reasonable disclosure is not an interim solution, but one that needs to exist in parallel with whatever future access model is developed, one that we will discuss in phase two. This allows us to deal with kind of ad hoc queries for those who may not be accredited in the future. I mean, basically, what we're saying is reasonable disclosure should neither wait for nor be replaced by any future standardized or unified access mechanism. That was the first. The second, we discussed adding additional details to the existing bullets in the Rec 12 text, mostly regarding concepts of timeliness, specificity. And so the first one we discussed were instructions and details as to where requests should be submitted. Oh, and by the way, I should mention that as Sarah mentioned in the chat, the registrars did propose some changes to what you're seeing on the screen here. So just keep that in mind as we walk through this. So with regard to the additional details in the Rec 12 bullets, the first things we discussed were instructions and details as to where requests should be submitted. The second one is we added language regarding specificity as to what should be included in disclosure requests. There's several suggestions there. Third, we discussed timeliness criteria in terms of the response. And so two time frames have been identified. The first is for an acknowledgement of receipt of the request, and the second is for the response to the request itself. In my draft, I didn't specify values there, but simply used variables X for acknowledgement and Y for response, and these values should be reasonable. And then, finally, there is text regarding specificity of the response, including details and justification as to why a request may have been denied. Remember, we're not making any assumptions that requests will be approved here. We understand that, depending on the legal basis, that the response may not include any data. That's fine. But we're, given the specificity and details in the request, we're hoping that we could outline some parameters regarding the response. And this could include, some information regarding as to why a request was denied, some justification and to give the requester some understanding as to why they didn't receive the data. It could also include details as to, for example, if a if a request is doesn't contain the correct set of information per the policy or is malformed, it may suggest information may be returned that suggests or indicates why what information is missing. What we want to do here is avoid a kind of unjustified blanket denials wherever possible. We want to get a feedback loop, if you will, so over time requesters understand what is required for them and that there is an understanding, so we can improve the process of requests based on information that receive and justifications that we may receive back in responses from the registrars in this case. And then finally, kind of before I shared this with the full list, we discussed the term, in the recommendation as it currently exists. It uses the term or the phrase parameters for responding to lawful disclosure, because we discussed that may not be a well-worded, and that, for example, it's the disclosure process itself that is lawful, not the request. And so we discussed perhaps updating that text to use the phrase request for lawful disclosure. So that's kind of things in a nutshell. And again, I mentioned Sarah and the registrars had some comments, but I'll leave it at that, and we could discuss things further. Thank you.
Thanks very much for that, and not detailed disclosure. I was gonna say the registrars in particular wanted to opine on their amendments to this. So with Sarah, if you wanted to opine on that, I'll let you cut in line. But if it's just a general comment, then we'll go to Alan. So Sarah, did you want to comment on the registrar edits to this?
Yes, thank you. I did, yes. So I want to thank Alex for explaining so clearly the changes that he had proposed. And I think a lot of this was really good work, so I was glad to be everything that I sent to the mailing list is still mostly stands, so I'll just outline briefly the specific points that we wanted to talk about. So the proposal that a link to the process should be provided in any RDS response. Actually, I quite liked Alex's response to my response. So I was asking or questioning whether it fit in with the consistent labeling and display policy, and then Alex had proposed where exactly that information could be added. So I am no longer opposed to that. That does not seem unreasonable to me. Another thing we had mentioned in our email was that the minimum information that should be included in a reasonable disclosure request actually depends upon what is the legal basis the user is relying upon to request the information. So we should just keep in mind that it might be the minimum, but it might not be applicable to all scenarios. And I had noted that Alex agreed with that comment. A couple other comments just in terms of the timelines. Acknowledging receipt of a request, I think, is appropriate, but I don't want to tie the contracted party to any specific timeline because, we have different business models, different time zones are also a concern. So I don't want to get too specific. I like the language without unreasonable delay, but ordinarily not more than 2 business days. That seems reasonable to me. And then in terms of the contracted parties responding within a certain period of time, I'm very hesitant to tie anybody to a specific time frame, although I do think that response should be provided. If any timeline is required, I think it should be 30 days, and that aligns with the GDPR's timeframes for providing data to the data subject. I know it's not exactly the same thing, like it's that is often specific to the transparency requirements, but I do think that that is still an appropriate correlation that we could use 30 days there. If the data subject themselves can only get information about themselves within a 30-day period, I think that's fine for somebody else as well. And then finally, just regarding the 1 of 4 ways that the contracted party must respond, I know some of some other people have more to say about that than I do, but I think requiring specific information is just, it's too detailed. We should expect the contracted party to be reasonable and provide a reasonably detailed response, but I don't think we need to spell out this clearly, the four possible ways of responding. Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. We're going to try to capture these recommended changes as they're spoken. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you to Alex, obviously, for pulling this together. He says it was a small team discussion. I would describe it more as a bit of a fever dream at the end of 3 days. But we still did it. And so thank you to Alex for pulling that together and starting off the discussion on this. Sarah just took all the wind out of my sails, which I'm quite happy. So that means I don't have to repeat anything. I completely agree with everything that she said on that. I will add one extra thing there that was pointed out by actually Christina. I'm just passing this on, so give credit where credit is due. But on the last page as well, in just see number four on the very last page, it says all responses denying access to all data. Again, we should keep that in line with the terminology that we're using. So it would be all responses denying disclosure of data. But apart from that, I would just second everything that was said to that Sarah just said there. So thank you, Sarah. And thank you, Alex.
Thanks. Go ahead, Farzina.
Thank you, Chris. Farzina speaking. So I just wanted to, I agree with what Sarah said and in general registrar's comment on this. I just wanted to reinforce that when in the response, in the request, when the requester asks or personal information, each data element should be justified why they need that data element and that personal information. So that justification has to be provided. I just wanted to reinforce that. Thank you.
So like... Justin, for each data element of the request, something like that, right?
Justification. I mean, the legitimate interest that they have and how it can be fulfilled by using the data elements in a specific. So why they need the name, why they need the email, why they need the address. I think this should be from them in the request then.
Yep. Okay, thanks. Amr, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Amr. Pretty much agree with everything Sarah and Farzi said. What Farzana just said is one of the two things I was going to bring up. Excuse me. I believe she is correct in that, the third parties with legitimate interests need to identify those as well as the corresponding legal basis, as opposed to leaving this to the registrars or registry operators who are being requested to disclose data. My other point is, I think the proposal Alex circulated is largely a very good one. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Steve had also done quite a bit of work on this as far back as Barcelona. I had one comment that, I wouldn't necessarily have an opinion on one way or another, but I imagine that contracted parties might. And it's about, the sort of how reasonable disclosure requests are described in this proposal, and the number of bullets that include, what a requester must submit to a registrar or a registry operator, I suppose, in order to have a request processed. One thing I'm not clear on is, if we're specifying the number of business days in which a contract party must respond, to confirm that they received a reasonable disclosure request or respond with the data being requested, how does that play out in terms of the volume of requests coming in? So if you have one requester submitting, let's say, a very large number of disclosure requests, does that affect whether they are reasonable or not, and does that affect the number of business days in which a contracted party is required to respond or not? I don't see any, I might have missed it, but I didn't see anything, you know, alluding to that in the proposal, and was wondering if it's something that we should address or not. Thank you.
And did Sarah's recommend that, Amr, where she talked about the timeline for responding? Maybe, maybe not. Ashley, welcome back.
Hi there. This is Ashley with a GAC. And yes, I've been gone for a while, so apologies in advance if anything I say has already been discussed and dealt with. But I think in large part, I just wanted to say that I've always thought that the efforts on this recommendation have been really important in terms of setting expectation for both parties. And I think this really is going towards achieving that with or without more detail. I'm kind of sympathetic to some of the things that Sarah is saying, and it's not clear to me that in all cases we need as much detail, but I'm certainly supportive for as much detail as folks are willing to agree to. So all that being said, and recognizing that I think this is could help, you know, both those who want to make the request as well as those of the contracted parties, so you're not constantly being pestered by those making the request, so everybody understands the rule of the road, I just wanted to ask, so at the beginning of the recommendation, it simply states that the EPD team recommends that the implementation take into consideration these criteria. And I'm not sure entirely like what's been discussed and not discussed and agreed upon, but it seems to me that's a bit weak language for something that I think is so incredibly useful to all stakeholders involved in this. I was wondering if there was any appetite to strengthen this a bit. Even I'd be willing to, you know, concede a bit on, you know, some of the, you know, strictness of the timelines and everything, just to have, you know, something in place that is going to be implemented as opposed to just being considered. So I just pose that to the group. Thanks.
Thanks, Ashley. I think, well, I'm going to go ahead down the queue. Thanks for your intervention. James, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. James speaking, and also wanted to thank Alex for teeing this up. And as a comment, I think Sarah touched on it, but Amr raised it as well. I wanted to talk a little bit about the timeline and scale. You know, I think when we say, you know, we should respond within a certain number of days or a certain number of hours, we're thinking in terms of what is reasonable and convenient for the party making the request. I think we need to maybe switch hats here a little bit and think about the fulfillment of those requests. You know, I think by some counts, you know, we chatted with our friends at VeriSign and we have our own data, but, you know, prior to May 29th, the WHOIS system could be expected to serve requests in the order of magnitude of several billion per month, and noting that some portion of that was, you know, just checking to see if a domain name was available, and some other portion of that will be taken care of by redacted, non-redacted, and some other portion of the non-redacted will be that the request is not legitimate. When you whittle all that down, you could still be talking about, you know, millions, maybe tens of millions of requests for disclosure in a given month. And so the idea that we wouldn't very quickly be swamped by a backlog of unfulfilled requests at a large provider level, I think is very concerning to me, particularly when this could create an entire new cost center that doesn't serve us and doesn't serve our customers. I think it is something that's concerning. So I would say, first of all, thank you again for this, I think, very well thought out framework, but I think when we get into time frames, you know, we have to think about what is commercially and technically reasonable for fulfilling these requests. And some of them may be automated. I'm hoping that some of them can be automated, but, you know, there are a number of these that will probably need at least some degree of human review, and then that starts to look at, for example, some of the content issues that we're seeing from some of the other larger platforms. It starts to scale up beyond the ability of the human population to fulfill those requests. So I just want to get that out there and have that be a consideration when we start building this framework out with timelines, required timelines for response. Thanks.
So to combine Milton's and Ashley's comment a little bit, we undertook this deeper dive into reasonable access. We had language about the parameters that should be used in providing reasonable access in our initial report, and we chose to do this deeper dive to see if we could meet around this, understanding that it's an interim step between now and when we have the development of the access model, which we're supposed to start developing on immediately after this. And so to Ashley, that's why we want to be somewhat lightweight in this approach. And to James's comment, you know, I think we should guard against causing the buildup of significant cost centers, especially if those cost centers are going to go away when the access model is devised. So one of the reasons we had put a lot of this discussion off until the access model, I think, was because of that. So in considering the work Alex and others have done, I think we should, you know, use our pencils to mark it up in a way consonant with that. Margie, please go ahead.
Sure, thank you. And I really appreciate all the hard work on this. It shows a lot of people coming together to address the issues that are important. A couple comments. The 30 days is way too long when you think about we've moved from a system, you know, where there were, you know, billions of requests instantaneously to now going to 30 days. Especially when you think about it from the perspective of cybersecurity, anti-fraud, anti-phishing. I think we really need to think about the timelines and whether we could perhaps have something shorter for those urgent ones, because that, in my view, seems to be a problem. I don't think anyone would think that 30 days is appropriate in an active phishing event. And so I just want to, you know, get us to think about that. The other issue, I agree with Ashley about trying to be more concrete in where we can, but I also recognize that, you know, we don't want to penalize a registrar for missing a time period, you know, occasionally, whatever the time period is that we do agree to. But we also have to be mindful that not all registrars actually will comply. And while the folks on this call, you know, will be doing the best they can to comply, we have to give compliance some tools for when, you know, a registrar simply doesn't comply. And so that's for the reason for the, you know, having some sort of concrete time period. And maybe it's not, you know, a hard set a period, but like an SLA concept, you know, a percentage has to be met within a certain time, something, you know, something that accommodates that, but gives the compliance department the tools they need to actually enforce for those, you know, parties that just simply, you know, don't comply at all. That's the reason for having something more concrete. Thank you.
Marjorie, do you have any thoughts about how to differentiate urgent requests from non-urgent requests?
I think yes. I mean, I think if it actually specifies an event and gives some proof, I mean, it's easy to show. Usually, if you're working with a anti-fraud vendor, you'll have screenshots of a phishing event, for example. You know, so you know, it probably. I think we could ask for
reasonably ask for extra proof in that scenario and have a shorter time frame. And I'm sure perhaps Benedict and others, even, you know, James, I mean, they probably deal with those things quite frequently. And so you know, maybe a couple of us could get together and just try to define when that urgent situation arises.
Thanks, Margie. Alex, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. It's Alex. I just wanted to comment on Sarah's edits to the section where we listed requirements for what information responses should include. I appreciate, you know, there's and the registrar's reasonings and the other statements that have been made on this topic this morning. You know, I suggested quite a bit of detail there, and the registrar suggested that all of that detail be deleted. I'm wondering if there's a more reasonable, if I could use that word, kind of compromise where we could put some framework around the responses that that still kind of satisfy you know, our needs, but don't freak out, if you will, the registrars. And so maybe, you know, if Sarah or others are willing to work on that, I'd be happy to do that. But I do think we need some detail there, and I'm not quite comfortable with deleting it outright. Thanks.
So I think we're one of the places this recommendation took us, Alex, is deep into some implementation details where, in cases where we're arguing, you know, 30 days or X number of days, which to me aren't really policy. So I wonder if there's a correct path here to zoom up the language into higher level policy language, and then that sets certain goals for the interim period for providing reasonable access while we wait for the standardized access model, and then that, because it's clear that we kind of have to go back to the drawing board and have a group noodle on these things some more. So the might be to look at what you've written and how it's been edited. Look at the policy goals for those things. Rewrite this recommendation in terms of those policy goals, and then then we can spin off, and or as part of the implementation team for that, spin that conversation off so we can have that discussion in the right level of detail. Because as soon as we start talking about days to respond, billions of requests, which ones are more important than others, and trying to set some sort of bar for that, it becomes really complicated. So, you know, we'll march through the rest of the queue, but I would suggest we go about it that way. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Kurt. First of all, you mentioned that our work on this recommendation 12 is an interim solution until such time when the access model is being worked on. I'm not sure whether that's accurate, because I think there will always be a need for criteria for individual requests, one-off requests by certain requestors that do not want to go through the process of getting accredited under whatever model we might define. So I may stand corrected, but I think that for individual claims, this might be a permanent solution that we're working on. I think that huge progress has been made on the criteria. I think that these criteria on the side of the requestor may work perfectly for civil claims. These disclosure requests would be responded to by the contracted parties according to Article 6.1F of the GDPR, where the contracted party is entitled to pass on data. And I think that we probably need to reflect that a little bit more, that there is no claim in the data, but that the contracted party is entitled to disclose the data. And I think that there needs to be a little bit of discretion for the contracted parties baked into this policy, because the requestor might be a little bit fishy in terms of, you know, origin or agenda, and in cases where it's doubtful what the data might actually be used for, I think it would be unfair to come up with a consensus policy that requires the contracted party to disclose and take the risk of an unlawful disclosure. The second point that I wanted to make is regarding law enforcement disclosure requests. And I think that the paper that's been worked on does not really work for those, because the criteria based on which contracted parties are required by law to disclose data might be totally different from the set of criteria established here. So for European law enforcement, they need to have a legal basis, and then the disclosure would take place based on Article 6.1C of the GDPR. And if you look at the second sentence of the first paragraph of Article 6, it explicitly states that public authorities cannot use 6.1F for their data processing, which means that if a law enforcement authority does not have a legal basis to request data, and then the disclosure would be an obligation for the contracted party, it can't just say, okay, but I still have an interest in that data, and then request it based on 6.1F. And so this is a legal issue that we've discussed a couple of times over the last couple of months, and I think it hasn't yet been responded to. How can data be made available to law enforcement authorities outside the EU in particular, if at all? And then I think we need to write up those criteria for handling those disclosure requests, but absent a legal opinion helping us with this, I'm concerned that, you know, if we don't clarify that these criteria will not work for law enforcement requests, that we will create false expectations and trouble for the entire ecosystem. Thank you.
Thanks very much for that, Thomas. I'm thinking about how to fold those comments, which I think were pretty much spot on, into a policy statement here, and what's left for implementation that I don't think we could figure out on these sets of calls. Christina?
Thanks. I think a lot of work has clearly been done. I think we are definitely moving in the right direction. Although I think it's been pretty clear through previous interventions that a number of members believe that there are some additional changes that may need to be made. I would just note that from the registry stakeholder group perspective, if we are going to be moving more in this kind of more implementation-like recommendation than the policy statement direction that you just articulated, I think we just need everyone needs to keep in mind that because there will be, this is materially different from what was published in the initial report, that at least for the registries, and I certainly don't want to speak for everyone else, we're going to definitely need some time to make sure that we can go back to the rest of the stakeholder group and present it and answer questions and the like. So if that changes the direction that we go in terms of further refinement of the recommendation as it is versus maybe kind of taking it back up to maybe the 15,000-foot level, that may be a factor. But I did just want to flag that. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. Hi, Steve. Welcome.
Thanks, Kurt. I'll try to honor your request to stay high level and not get into the implementation weeds. And I'll only speak not to what is in the policy, but what we need to acknowledge is the reality that we're going to need a disclosure policy permanently. And I'm reacting to what Cavus had inserted and toggling back and forth to Sarah's red line of the earlier text. And at a point, I would be most interested to see if Sarah would acknowledge that we permanently need a disclosure method under what we called reasonable access in the temp spec, but that we'll permanently need that since not every entity will be able to be an accredited entity under any reasonable, any unified access model that we come up with in the future. In other words, we're permanently going to need the disclosure request as well as a policy governing the request. And if that's the case, we can resolve one of the differences in your red line, what is on the Adobe screen, and I think at that point address that Cavus's edits probably don't apply since it would no longer be an interim policy for requests for lawful disclosure. So, Sarah, interested to hear your reply with that. You can put it in the chat or get into the queue. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Steve. Well, I'll refrain from commenting. I think that was a good intervention. Please go ahead, Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much, and I apologize. I've got some construction work done. There may be background noise. A couple of things. James's intervention, which was now a long time ago, on we have to be realistic that the workload is heavy and it may be really difficult to do it. I'm sympathetic with that, but at the same time, we're trying to set up rules that balance various needs, both the needs of the registrars and registries to control costs and the needs of various other groups to access information. So somehow we have to come up with a reasonable balance. The 30 days or 1 month, normally for these kind of things, there's a distribution curve of some things get done quicker, some things get done slower. If 30 days is the tail end of the curve for the lowest priority requests, that's probably fine. If, on the other hand, like some organizations, if you say it's 30 days, then you will get nothing before day 29, that's totally unacceptable. So somehow the wording has to not only set a limit, but you know, explain the methodology, but set expectations so that the limit is not the norm. Lastly, I'll comment. I'm one of the ones who initiated this discussion, asking, is there something we could do on an interim basis before the universal access model is available, if it ever is, to try to straighten out things and try to make them more predictable. And I'm not sure we need to do that for the Phase 1 report. I'm not sure the mechanism that we could publish it and get it enacted before the end of Phase 2, but there may be some way, if we're talking about best practices or things like that, that we can put them in place even though we don't settle them within the tight time frame we have right now for publishing the report. I'm not sure that's possible, but that was the original intent when the discussion was first raised, and I'll raise it again as a possibility. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Practice is attractive. So I want to agree with Steve and Thomas that this isn't, I agree, this is not an interim policy that it will extend on after the access model is complete. But we're at this inflection point in area in volume of activity where up until May 25th, there was easy access to data. So registrars and maybe registries got a few requests. And then with that data being cut off, the amount of data requests, you know, multiplied many times. So James is talking in numbers like in the billions. And then with the access model, hopefully if done well, that that activity or that will taper off. So there'll be a need for this policy, but it will be used much less. And so what we're trying to deal with here is some unknown quantity and coming up with criteria for how they will be dealt with. And I think that's what we're struggling with here. And that's why we thought that we could put a much finer point on this when discussing the access model, because we would have a much better idea of activity levels and how we expect them to be curtailed by the existence of some standardized access model. So while this is not an interim policy, I think we have an interim situation, and it's difficult for us to put a fine point on these criteria. And that's again, that's why I think the implementation details of this are better left to a discussion after we're done here. So I'm going to talk to, I think Thomas's hand is an old hand, but I'll wait to see there and call on Ashley and Brian, and then bring this to a close.
Thanks, Kurt. Ashley with the GAC. So I just wanted to, I guess, respond largely to Alan Greenberg and to a previous, I guess it was Thomas's comment, in that I think this definitely should be something that is goes beyond best practices. I think what we have now in terms of reasonable access, completely undefined, really doesn't serve anybody's purpose. So even if we go back to broader language as opposed to very specific, I think we really miss an opportunity here to bring some clarity into what reasonable access means. Even if that means, you know, to be developed at a later date in terms of, you know, we recommend that there be timelines, but the specifics around those timelines will be agreed upon at a later date, but the contracting parties agree to, with among themselves or individually, have published response times along those lines for other of these criteria as well. Also, I just want to make sure that we don't muddy this kind of effort here, which is like getting into the details about upon which basis things are going to be used as the rationale for granting access and those things. So I don't think that's the intent here, and we'll very quickly kind of go down a rat hole if we go there. So I think if we just keep ourselves focused on, you know, what the rules of the road are here, providing some clarity around that, so at least we get something out of this exercise that makes it more clear as to what reasonable access means. And I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thanks, Ashley. Brian, you're going to wind this up.
Great. So thanks, guys. I want to thank everybody for the productive conversation here. I think this is really helpful. I would clarify that I think it's going to be important that we not assume that this should go away when we get to some accredited or unified access. It's foreseeable that there's still need to make one-off requests, and especially maybe for urgent things or for something that falls outside the scope of what an organization has been accredited to request data about. And I think that we shouldn't just assume this will go away also, because I think that could be an incentive for folks that may be accredited to use their accreditation for different purposes, and so we wouldn't want to encourage that incentive. There's a number of reasons, I guess I should say, that we think that we should put this in place and agree that it continues even when we get to the unified access. And then the point I would make, and I'm happy if this goes to the list or for offline conversation, but I think if I work at a registrar, and if I put on my registrar hat, I would much rather I would appreciate the kind of reasonableness that the kind of language that Sarah and proposed and Matt Zerlin proposed in the chat, and I think that we're the IPC is able to accommodate that concept. And I'd like to explore how we do that in a way that gives compliance certainty, because it would be helpful for Mark Monitor and our registrar business, for example, to know that we're not going to get a compliance complaint, or that ICANN compliance, for them to know that they're not going to get a compliance complaint when the data is not provided within 2 days or 12 hours if the complainant and the requester thinks that that's a reasonable delay. So I think if we can get some clarity and certainty around when compliance has teeth to go after the registrars that are not here and will not likely cooperate until they get that compliance notice or inquiry, then that would be a better situation for everyone and not and so I think that's what we should work toward. I'm happy to help with that conversation offline. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks very much, Brian. So I'm just looking at the chat here. So I think I'd like to do this, you know, certainly we've compiled all the comments that have been written here. We have a transcript. You know, I'd like to meet the support staff and Rafiq and me to try to make some amendments to what's been written here and post that to the list later today and maybe take up this conversation, you know, a little bit in email, but I understand this oral conversation is good. So I'm just seeing plus one, so that could scroll up. So my offer is that we'll come out with a, rather than throw this back to the small group, make some edits based on the comments by today and then take it from there. And of course it can be amended further. So if that's okay, then I propose this. The meeting's supposed to go on, so we're going to go on. We're supposed to take a break, but we've eaten up some of that time. Let's take our next topic is recommendation one, additional purposes, which might be renamed. And then data retention, and I think those might be fairly short, but we'll see. I've been very wrong in the past. So the agenda calls for a 10-minute break, but why don't we kind of combine that? Take a 10-minute break, but read through the attached comments from the registrars ALAC and the NCSG on additionals, and then you know, build in a little extra break about that. So let's reconvene in 10 minutes, which I think would be 20 minutes after the hour, if that's all right with everybody. I'm going to put my mic on mute, get a cup of coffee, and I'll see you guys in a few minutes. Thanks very much for hanging in there.
Hi, everyone. We're starting back up. Thanks for your continued attention on this. Okay, this topic has to do with additional purposes. I'm hoping you can hear me. And you know, this is sort of a discussion in separate chapters, so maybe we should take the separate chapters here. In the first one, remember this is a review of public comment. And I think Milton did a nice job. Public comment, there were comments made for suggesting additional purposes. And I think Milton did a nice job in his email of addressing those. So I just wanted to put those, that email into the meeting minutes, and the email was in there, and I just give you a second to reflect on that. But I would advocate for reaching Milton's conclusion that, you know, other than the additional purposes that we've discussed in the past and that are on the table, I think that's all that reach a level for further discussion. So I would support Milton's memo and move on from there unless there are any objections. So thanks for doing that work. That saved us a lot of time. Yep. And we also, you know, we have the topics of ALAC, and I think the ARS work, and where I think there's been some closeness to accommodation reached on the email list, but maybe we'll let Alan talk to that. We have comments from the registrars that Sarah could talk to, and then finally some comments from ICANN that maybe Trang can talk to. So if we want to go through those, Alan, do you want to start?
Sure. The emails have been somewhat confusing.
Thanks, Alan. Go ahead, please.
Yep. Thank you. The emails have been somewhat confusing because there have been proposals, but other people then go back to the previous ones. So I'm not really sure where things stand right now. The ALAC originally proposed that ARS be a new purpose. It was tentatively decided partway through Toronto that we could treat it as an access issue and defer it to phase two, which we, you know, accepted. Not optimal, but we accepted that. Milton, in a later email shortly after Toronto, asked, and I'm not sure if that's the one you just pointed to now or not, asked why is ARS not a compliance issue, and I tended to agree. ARS essentially is an audit of related to compliance. It's not an audit of registrars or registries. It's an audit of the data, and it can easily be accommodated as part of Purpose 6 with some changes to the rationale. The rationale specifically talked about the contractual compliance department in several places, and by simply changing that to talk about ICANN in the more general sense, and not because ICANN is the legal entity. Contractual compliance is an arbitrary department, you know, that could be changed, and ICANN can reorganize itself at any point. So by referring to ICANN and treating this as essentially a compliance audit, it falls completely within the domain of Purpose 6, and can be eliminated, not put into phase six, but simply with those changes, if everyone's agreeable to them, we can accommodate the ARS and take it off our, you know, check it off our list. So we can live with it being a purpose, we can live with it being integrated into purpose six, and we can live with it being deferred as a part of an access discussion. But, you know, we just need to decide which way we're going and not keep on going in all directions at once. Thank you.
Go ahead, Milton. Thanks for that, Alan.
Yes. I think we, and it sounds like Alan agrees, are very eager to stop pushing things into phase two and would like to resolve this. And we were perfectly okay with Alan's proposed rewording of purpose. Now, my idea was purpose five, not purpose six, even though I'm continually referred to it as purpose six. Somebody should check that. But the purpose relating to compliance, which I thought was purpose five, you know, the way he reworded that was fine with us, that it just generalized it to ICANN org rather than the compliance department. Indeed, understanding the GDPR, I'm not sure that different departments of different of the same organization need to have different purposes anyway. And that was the only other comment I wanted to make, was that the, in terms of purpose O, or the proposed research purpose, that the Bird and Bird legal counsel told us that an organization, if it was a controller, could do research with its own data. And obviously there would still be constraints on personally identifiable, publishing personally identifiable data as part of that research, but I think that if all we're concerned about is the ability of ICANN to, ICANN's Office of the Chief Technology Officer or the other cybersecurity elements within ICANN to do research with anonymized WHOIS data or with general patterns, and we're concerned about compliance, I think we can get this done, and we don't have to have a different purpose, and we don't need to kick it to phase two. So, what exactly does need to be done other than that?
Thanks, Milton, for those two concrete suggestions. So I won't hop it. Sense agreement around adding ARS to purpose five in some way, and dealing with it in that way. And so if everyone could comment on. You know, leaving research in for now, but removing it if legal advice indicates it's not necessary, something like that. Anyway, commenting on those two would be excellent. Mark, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson. I guess I've, from my perspective, I've always looked at ARS as a compliance function, and so, you know, my two cents is that it makes sense to include that in the compliance purpose. So I guess I'm supportive of that change. On the other one, as far as the Octo, the question is whether this Octo thing should be a purpose or not. You know, I think, I think that's the question in front of us right now is, do we treat them, do we treat their access to the data as just another access request, which we would consider under purpose two, or is this require a separate and specific process, purpose, specifically called out? And so is the work they're doing, significantly, different such that they require their own purpose, to define why data is being processed and why they would
be accessing and processing that data. And I'm not sure I've heard anything coming from ICANN staff that indicates that they are asking for or need any specific purpose or access to data. I've not seen them justify that or even indicate that they're looking to justify any extra or additional purpose for them to process this data. Happy to be corrected if I missed something in the swarm of emails, but it seems like we're creating a purpose or trying to create a purpose where maybe one is not needed. Again, happy to be corrected there if I'm wrong. But I also, I guess this conversation started off as sort of a recommendation for us to take this up during phase two, and I just want to flag that a little bit and just remind everybody that, our charter, part 1A, the first part of our charter deals with, defining purposes. And it's also, that's the first gating item for getting to phase two. And so I want to caution a little bit against pushing any discussion on purposes off to a later phase. Coming to agreement on purposes is really foundational for phase one. That's not to say, we may not need to revisit something in phase two, but this is really foundational work that we need to define in phase one and not push off to phase two. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mark. I remember ICANN's input into that and from the office, the technical office, stating that, at this point, they don't require data that's being redacted for their study. So that causes me to think that that the approach to number two is the appropriate one, because their mission is certainly security and stability related, and since they've signaled that they don't need data on a constant basis, then data they would need for any of the reasons that are, flashing by in the chat here would be security and stability related, since that's their mission, and they could just request that data under purpose two, and I think it would fit well. And subject to the condition that Moten put on it about getting legal counsel for this, but under that sense, I think that would have a legal basis. Alan Greenberg?
Thank you very much. Regarding Milton's comment that this should just be allowed because we are a controller, that would be true if we had the data, but we don't have the data. I think the concept of integrating this into Purpose 2 is fine. It certainly fits under security stability. However, to do that, we need a new processing activity allowing the transmission of data from registries and registrars to ICANN. That's not there right now. So if we include a new processing activity, which includes that transfer, and, of course, perhaps add that to the contracts requiring them to address those requests for data, then I think we've done it. We can't just say it's purpose two without a processing activity that allows it to actually happen, because we're in the unusual situation of being a controller without the data. So, I think we could fix it. I would caution that the fact that Okto has said they're not using the data now, and I believe that is what they said under GDPR, under the temporary spec, doesn't prove anything. And moreover, even if they have never used the data before, we're building a system that has to be resilient going forward. We don't know what the needs are going to be going forward. So, again, to reiterate what Milton said, it should be part of our normal business and should be allowed, but that presumes we have access to the data. If we integrate that into Purpose 2, I think we've done it. It's easy. Thank you.
Uh,
Curtis, Margie, if I could be in the queue. Thanks, sorry,
thanks,
I'm not online.
Welcome, Benedict. Please go ahead. All right, right after Benedict.
Thanks, guys. I'm not sure. I'm easy either way, really. I think the stickiness in purpose two makes sense with the caveat that Alan mentioned that we need to just make sure that's explicitly listed. Purpose two talks about third party access, whereas ICANN is clearly a first party. So I wonder if we would need to slightly clarify that in the language to make sure that this is the intention. My thinking was just sat better in 5 or 6, I can't remember which, the compliance purpose. And the reason for that is that it's a reading of the research language in GDPR, which says that you're allowed to use data you've already got for further processing. So that means taking the data you've got, doing something else with it that you haven't explicitly asked permission with, as long as you notify the registrar and the data subject. But what we're talking about, as Alan's pointed out, we're talking about data that the controller doesn't have. And so that seems to indicate that we need an explicit purpose for it. And that's I've put that question to Ruth, and she said basically we need to get the authorization of the group to ask that question formally. So I'm asking you guys if we're okay to ask Ruth if that makes sense to live in a separate purpose, in which case it would make sense to put in with all of the other ICANN org functions like compliance. But it sounds like we're close to a solution on this one, as long as we all agree that ICANN will be able to obtain this data when it needs it. I think that's, and we haven't accidentally shot ourselves in the foot. Thank you.
So you broke up for me a little bit, Benedict. To whom did you want to ask those questions? Was that legal counsel or somewhere else?
To legal counsel.
Okay. Thanks for that. You know, I see the queue is empty. I understand, Benedict. I understand
Margie,
your concerns. And
it's Margie. I was in the queue.
First of all, I think if we were to make here and put this. Oh, Margie, go ahead. The queue is not empty. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Go ahead, please. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Fine to me.
Sorry, I had to do my commute. I agree wholeheartedly with what Alan and Benedict said. If you look at the comments that I sent to the list on Friday, one of the things that the BC is highlighting is the concept of threat response as it relates to ICANN org. And so I think it'd be very important to clarify purpose two, if that's where we're going to put it. To address the ability of ICANN org to access the data for threat response and research. Thank you.
Thank you, Margie. So that's right. And combining that with Benedict's, and now seeing that the queue is not empty, go ahead, Hadia.
Okay, so I also agree with Benedict and Margie, and so we either need to have it as a purpose because
how's the old microphone working today? There you go.
Is it good? Okay, so I would also agree to have it as a purpose as well.
Yes, thanks. Sorry.
It is better to be roughly right than precisely wrong. Or alternatively, we could ask Ruth. Thank you.
Thanks for this, and thanks, everybody. So I think what's important is for us to be clear that data can be made available, for this purpose. Whether or not it's a separate purpose or not, under some sort of 6.1F legal basis, so that the exact use of the data isn't known yet, and so we have to be able to, as Alan said, be able to accommodate these requests when they come in. as the requests come in for these reasons. I'm personally not so concerned about making a mistake that, if we put it on purpose two and then, at some later date, there's an opinion that it really belongs under purpose six. I don't think that would obviate the ability of ICANN to collect this data. So, and I think the mission, so this is my personal opinion now, but, I think the mission of the Octo is along security and stability lines, and I sure like the cleanliness of dividing that from compliance and not making compliance sort of a catch-all ICANN uses of data. So, our purposes are security and stability, and that's one purpose, and Octo goes under that, and we have another purpose for contractual compliance, and those things go under there. So I think it makes our product a lot cleaner. So I think we want to resolve the questions that Benedict and others raised that, for example, can we treat ICANN like a third party in the instance of this stability and security request because it's this part of ICANN that's requesting the data. So make sure it's clean there. But, proceed along the lines that we started this conversation with, that we put the ARS, we make a note of that under recommendation 5, which is contractual compliance, and the mission of Octo, stability and security related. We put that under purpose 2, which is our security and stability purpose. We test and we test the legality of both those things. And I'd ask here, but particularly staff, to make those indications in an appropriate way for everybody to look at in the next day. I also think that Alan Greenberg's comment that that would require some additional work in the data workbook is required. So I'd look for a thumbs up from Barry or Alan or Mark that work would be that would necessitate this kind of work. Am I correct in thinking that Alan is correct, that we'd need to do some work on the data elements workbook and create this data flow? Thanks, Benedict. Okay, can I get some form of a sense that this is the right way to proceed? Okay, then finally on this, we have some from ICANN, and I assume you're there at the bottom of the attendance list. Could you outline the issues ICANN raise with this?
Hi, Chris. This is Trent. Are we talking about?
So Milton, can you speak up where you say no? Trent, can you just hang on 1 minute? Milton, go ahead.
Yeah, this is about ICANN's own research, right? ICANN is not a third party. It's obvious to me that just doesn't work. And by putting it into a purpose which is geared towards third-party access, I don't know what kind of doors we're opening for indiscriminate access to the WHOIS data for some kind of a claimed research purpose. And as a social scientist who frequently sniffs out various sources of data, for research, you can want any data and all data for any purpose. So that's just too open-ended. If ICANN wants to do research, either for compliance purposes or for its own internal SSR purposes, that's fine, but that's not a purpose two thing. That's a purpose five thing. And I just have real serious qualms about trying to shoehorn this whole idea into purpose two when we're not dealing with a third party, we're dealing with ICANN.
So down the line, I want to divide this into two. So my understanding would be that that if ICANN, Okta wanted data for a certain purpose, it would have to demonstrate that past, the 6.1f TATO. It wouldn't make all data available all the time, but rather would make available data on a one-off basis for a very specific study and demonstrated that the benefit of those studies, outweighed the privacy rights of others. So I'm not concerned with that part of it so much. I want you to come back to me on that. And then, so where did you propose then putting this in your recommendation at the top, if not in purpose two?
As I said, I think we need to clarify with the legal counsel whether ICANN can, as controller, and ICANN needs to decide whether it's a controller here, of course, but assuming it is, then the fact that it doesn't have the data doesn't necessarily mean that it requests it if it is a controller. So we need legal advice on that and whether that's actually needs a distinctive purpose. That's not a third-party access issue under any construction. That's ICANN getting data about its own system and doing research on it, which we support, but we don't want it in purpose to.
Thanks, Milton. Alan, go ahead. Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, thank you. I misspoke before when I said it could go into purpose two. I've forgotten that purpose two is third parties right now, so it cannot be purpose two. ICANN under no conditions is a third party. We can fix it, however, either by adding a new purpose or simply modifying purpose two to say to third parties for legitimate lawful purposes or to ICANN and then add a processing activity for it. So we could make purpose two apply to ICANN as well. If that's offensive to people, then it probably has to be a new purpose. Not because we need a purpose for ICANN doing the processing of the data, but to ensure that it can be sent to ICANN. So it's not the processing that's the purpose. It's the transmission to ICANN that we have to ensure is enshrined in some purpose. So we can fix two by adding ICANN as an other recipient in addition to third parties. I don't see where I can't see anywhere else it fits. I wouldn't want to put it into five because five is very much a compliance one, and this is not a compliance issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Mark?
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson. Reflecting what Alan's saying in chat, Okta has not told us what they are doing / indicates the need is necessary. I maybe want to put Trang on the spot a little bit or ask ICANN staff to weigh in here because, I think if we are going to create a new purpose, we really need that to come from ICANN. Registries and registrars, we are, processing, collecting data, you know, for the purposes of activating and allocating a domain name. And so if ICANN needs us to collect, process, you know, transfer to them data for something else, if they need us to do that for writing a research paper or doing some kind of security or stability activity, we really need that to come from them. And, you know, as, you know, Thomas is saying once again, you know, Octo has confirmed they don't need that, you know, that personal data. And so I, you know, I'm not hearing, you know, Octo or ICANN say that they need a purpose here for processing personal data. You know, I'm happy to be corrected on that, but, you know, it doesn't seem like we, you know, based on what we're hearing, we need to do something, you know, we need to create a specific purpose. But if we do need one, I think we really need that to come from them, and we need them to define, you know, what the data is that they're, you know, what the processing activity is. What data are they expecting to be collected and transferred to them, and for what purpose?
Yep. So that's an excellent point. You know, say we're silent on this, and at some later date, Octo needs personal data for something that's, you know, that something we all think is. So under the current regime, they can't go to compliance and ICANN and ask for that data, because that's a data transfer that's not contemplated in any of our work and doesn't have a legal basis. So is there if for things that aren't mentioned by our team, you know, is there ways for you know, bona fide entities with data requests with legal basis to get that data, you know, outside of the purposes we define here? Or should we try to anticipate that? Because I agree with you and others on the chat that says that in the next, especially the technology office, has been reticent to express any need for data at all. Farzaneh?
Thank you, Kurt. Farzan speaking. So I think that we are really getting confused because we keep repeating and digging out issues and questions that we have responded to multiple times. Basically, this is not even a disclosure or an act issue, because Benedict also says even if in the future Octo needs personal information, they need hashed, pseudonymized personal information, which is not subject to GDPR. What Benedict is, I believe, what Benedict needs, as he said in chat, is that the registrars and registrars be allowed to hash the data and then transfer it to ICANN. This is what we need to, if the group needs to see appropriate, they need to address it. That is the issue. There is no additional data elements that should be transferred in the future. There is no personal information that Octo needs to have access. Octo has on multiple occasions said that they do not need to have access to personal information. And for the future purposes, they only need access to hashed data, which, in my limited knowledge of GDPR, it is not subject to GDPR. The only thing that we need to discuss here, I believe, is that how if we should have a purpose for registries and registrars to hash the data, which is Benedict is saying that is like a processing thing and they should have a purpose for it. Thank you.
Thanks, Farzaneh. Benedict, can you close out the comment on this, please?
Yeah, I think Fazi summarized pretty well. It seems that if we think this is something that ICANN should do in the future and a function that should live at ICANN, and to me it seems pretty obvious that an organization that is acting as controller should be able to check the quality of the data that it's responsible for. It's like a perform the search functions and so on and so forth, which seems to me entirely obvious. And as Fazi has discussed, that would be performed with hash data, so privacy would be maintained. And then we need to work out how that's done, and it might be worth taking legal advice, and Ruth has already said she can. She's prepared to opine on that as to whether that would be done in a separate purpose, which Milton seems to be tending towards, or rolled into an existing purpose, and subsequently whether that purpose should be a third-party access one or an ICANN org kind of purpose. And if there's any serious disagreement with that, please let me know. But that seems to be the question we should at least be asking to legal for legal advice on. Thanks.
Yeah, and perhaps augmenting that question with, this is something evidently we anticipate there might be some requests in the future, and to what extent do we need to accommodate for that, or will, ICANN and other controllers' ability to process data in different ways be affected if it's not spoken to in this policy? Amr?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Amr. I agree with a comment that Alan Woods put in the chat a little while ago about this being far beyond the scope of the EPDP in general. Not only do I believe it's outside the scope of this EPDP, but I believe it should be outside the scope of any EPDP. EPDPs are meant to have extremely narrow mandates that cover issues that have been appropriately scoped in the past. This one hasn't. I think this topic needs to be addressed in something that deals with RDS in a broader sense, like the RDS PDP that was suspended, for this to go through an issue scoping phase, at which time ICANN.org would have the opportunity to really spell out what their needs are in this case. If you all recall, we specifically asked ICANN what they need or what their common practices had been in the past. The only response we got is what they do now in terms of Octo in the new GDPR/temp spec setting. But we didn't get a straight answer from them on what they did prior to this or what they might have needed or may need in the future, despite us giving them the opportunity to provide this input. So if we're going to deal with this issue one way or another on this EPDP, I believe we should draft a recommendation that the GNSF Council take this issue up in any other, proper PDP with an issue scoping phase, because that's where it's more likely to be dealt with more appropriately. Thank you.
Thanks. Last comment, Alan.
Thank you. I did have my hand up before. Someone seems to have put it down. Regarding Amr's comment, the concept of putting this off to another PDP, which would probably take multiple years, is ludicrous. This is an SSR issue. Thank you.
Thanks. So, with regard to Amr's comment, one thing that's in scope for us is to determining if there are any other purposes for processing data. So in that sense, it's within scope, but we find ourselves speculating as to whether this is going to be a needed purpose or not. And that sort of speculation is probably not within our scope. So, the best path for us, given the state of discussion and our uncertainty, because we haven't had a good sense from ICANN whether they're as interested in this as some of us are, is to proceed with the set of legal questions to Ruth. So we'll work on that and try to have those legal questions done tomorrow and ready to ship off. I asked Chris and Leon.
discerning Christina's okay. There's one more topic I'd like to talk about in this recommendation one, and it goes down to a, well, we have a few minutes, and that goes down to a slight rewording proposed by the BC. So I don't know if Margie can get on the phone and talk to this.
Sure. Can you guys hear me? I think we were talking about, sorry, I'm on the bus. It's hard to read what I wrote. we remember the discussion related to, was it purpose one? And originally we were talking about benefits and responsibilities. The only additional suggestion that I have
to
address that would be using the word maintenance, use maintenance or disposition. And I think that captures what we were thinking about with regards to benefits and responsibilities.
Right. So, So the BC recommendation on purpose, this purpose is, I think in 1B would be to ensure that a registered name holder may exercise its use, maintenance, and disposition of a registered name. So instead of may exercise its rights in the use and disposition of a registered name, may exercise its rights to the use, maintenance, of its name. Mark Anderson?
Hey, Kurt. Mark Anderson. I'm sorry. I got a little bit lost. We moved on to a new topic, but I'm not quite sure what the new topic is. And it sounds like Margie's trying to tee up on something new. But I feel like I'm not following along, and that's not fair to Margie. So if I get a little clarification on what we're tackling right now, that would be helpful.
Sure, this is Margie. This is purpose one, and we were finishing.
Yeah, so that's my fault. I recognizing the time was short. Go ahead, Margie.
Sorry. I was just trying to address the issue related to, if you remember in Toronto, Purpose 1, to go back to Purpose 1, on the comments, there was a big discussion we had about rights and responsibilities, benefits, and, you know, all that sort of thing. And the reason why we felt that we still needed to address the issue is that the current language talks about the registrant's use or disposition of the domain name, and it seemed like that there was something missing. And I think the concept that we're trying to get at is we should insert the word maintenance. It would be use, maintenance, and disposition of the domain name. And then issues that related to trying to put in the concept of obligations.
So I understand there's quite a bit of delay on my side of the line right now, and I apologize for that. So we're over time. So I think we have a couple items. This one, which I think we could close out fairly easily. A set of questions we got on this from ICANN that Trang had teed up. So I think we're going to have to put this off for some other discussion, either email or in the next meeting.
given where we are now, I'll collaborate with the staff, try to take a step back from where we are right now and look at the whole picture and better solidify a go-forward plan for closing this off. I definitely heard the comments regarding providing each group some time to step back and read the report, and hope we can come up with some sort of approach to that to provide everyone sufficient time to do that. I hope and I know that you're already in constant touch with your other the rest of your stakeholder group. So we'll try to stop shoveling for a few minutes and zoom up again and come up for a plan for getting to the end date. And then I encourage you to take a look at Trang's questions that she's posed in the chat as preparation for the next meeting, or discussion. But we'll sharpen that in the agendas we provide to you. So with that, I'm going to let everybody go. Everyone for their continued dedication and time to this, and I'll be talking to you soon. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Operator, if you could please stop all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.